Episode 25 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping. We're also brought to you by Sisu, definitely the best mouthguard I've ever owned. Head on over to their website, it's sisuguard.com, and use the promo code FNP10 for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
All right, it's July 6th. It's a Friday edition of the Fight Night Picks podcast, episode number 25 coming at you today. We've got another great interview and a 226 breakdown, so let's get right into it. All right, episode number 25. You know, you had your Hall of Fame class there last night with Ronda Rousey and Matt Serra. You know, Art Davies even said it was special being on the 25th anniversary of the UFC and the first UFC one with Hoyce Gracie winning that one way back in 1993. Pretty hard to believe that the company started, you know, from those humble beginnings and they are where they are now. And a really special event there last night, especially with Matt Serra subduing that drunk guy the night before. Kind of neat there. And that video was passed around, of course, on Twitter, so probably get a chance to see that. We didn't really have too many issues, you know, with guys missing weight. I see Michael Chiesa weighed in at 157.5, so of course he's over that lightweight limit. And I saw Ariel had tweeted out that hopefully him and Pettis are able to come to an agreement, and I'm sure he's going to lose a bit of his purse there, but the fight should still be going on. No issues with 226 weigh-ins. DC weighed in, and I think it was like 246, so no issues there. And everyone else on pace, of course, with the Ultimate Fighter 27 tonight. The only person that I saw that missed weight was Julian Marquez, weighed in at 190. And it was kind of neat because I saw Thiago Santos, didn't really anticipate him stepping up on the scale, but he was a guy just to have in case Adesanya or Tavares ended up missing weight. He weighed in at 185.5, so he could have taken that fight with Alessio there, but not so. And Julian Marquez weighing in 5 pounds over the limit. And I asked him a question on Reddit there the other day. He had an AMA and asked him how many times he wanted to fight in 2018. He said 4. So kind of looking like that's probably not going to happen for him this year. But I wish him nothing but the best, man. Cuban Missile Crisis, definitely an interesting guy to watch and a really exciting fighter for sure at middleweight. So why don't we just get right into it? I had Stephen Riccardi on from the Jersey Boys podcast. You can catch him on YouTube. He's also on Twitter as well. Really smart mind as far as MMA is concerned. He also does a little bit of field work for MMA India. He's covered some events live and in person, and I'll talk about that a bit. I'll be honest, I had a few issues with the audio there, and there are some skips in it, and I'm working to get that figured out. I don't know if it was a connection issue on my part, but I was able to fill in my audio from my end, and Stephen skips a bit, but it's not his problem whatsoever. However, it's mine for sure, and I really appreciate him coming on. So here's Steven and our breakdown of UFC 226. So you and I were going to cover the UFC 226 card. I went over the Ultimate Fighter season 27 finale on Tuesday. I mean, it sucks that we lost Max Holloway, Brian Ortega there late last night. I just watched the press conference there before we started up. And there's no way there's going to be a replacement. So co-main event now is actually going to be Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou. And also today, I guess Julian Marquez missed weight there too with the Ultimate Fighter. So he told me on Reddit yesterday that he wants to fight 4 times in 2018. It's not looking like that's going to happen. But yeah, we might as well just break it down top to bottom. And you had your, when did you have your 226 breakdown?
We made numbers. We did it on Monday, and then I did with Zelda. We did the Tough 27 breakdown on Tuesday. On Tuesday. Okay. So so we did that on Tuesday. So both of those have been put online and on Twitter.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's get started. I mean, first fight on the card. You guys have questioned it on your podcast, and I've been questioning it all day. Your first fight's women's strawweight fight. You got Jamie Moyle and Emily Whitmire. And, you know, you go down through the records. It's kind of hard to tell who's going to win. I mean, to me, if you look at Whitmire, she's a combined 4-7 as an amateur with her exhibition and pro fights. And she does have a win over Bellator flyweight title challenger, Emily Ducote. But, it's a tough one. Whitmire doesn't have the reach. She's got a little bit of height. But that's a tough matchup for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a tough matchup, but I think it's in Moyle's favor. Again, the betting odds are in Moyle's favor. I just don't think that Whitmire is very good. You know, you mentioned we questioned it, and I questioned it just because I don't think she's very good. I know she fought up at 125. This fight will be at 115, but I think Moyle's the better wrestler, and she went for about 10 takedowns against Kaylin Curran. So with that being said, I think she said she's going to be able to get underneath Whitmire. I think she'll be able to push her up against the cage, drag her down, or go for, you know, single leg, double leg, take her down. I don't think that very good in any specific area, whether it be striking, kicking. I don't know what her ground game really looks like, because the one time I saw her, I believe she got submitted. So I think Moyle can get her down, and I think that if you're playing this on DraftKings or you're betting this, I think Moyle's a safe bet. You may want to parlay it because the odds are a little bit high right now. But I think it's a pretty safe cash game play in DraftKings. And you may even want to play it in GPPs if you like, only because I think that she can get a submission and maybe get a couple takedowns the way that they score it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the Curran win I discount a little bit because Curran was 1-6 in her last 7 fights. But, I mean, she did have a pro submission win over J.J. Aldrich, who you've kind of seen the UFC give a little bit of a push. And she hasn't fought in a little over a year since losing to Vivian Pereira. But, yeah, I'd be going with Moyle in that fight. I mean, it's going to be tough trying to get fans into that one on the Fight Pass prelims. But we'll see what happens with that whole new ESPN deal and what they end up doing with the Fight Pass prelims. But your next fight, man, that's a barn burner. If you've got Groovy Lando Venata and Jakara Close, like, if you look at Venata's record, I think I'm going to end up disagreeing with you on this fight. But he's 1-2-1 in the UFC. I mean, he shocked the world when he kind of came out and fought Tony Ferguson. Got submitted, but he's a super competitive fighter. I mean, his striking's really, really good. Lands almost 6 significant strikes per round. He eats a fair amount of shots, but at the same time, his distance management's pretty good. If you watch that fight against John McDessie, I mean, he was winning the fight, and then he had a highlight reel spinning wheel kick. And, yeah, he had some rough patch against David Taymor, didn't end up winning that fight. And I kind of compare Taymor to Jakara Close. They're both, you know, they've got heavy hands. They look for the knockout. And, you know, both guys with losses to Taymor. But, yeah, I see this fight going Venata's way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bad pick to go Venata's way. When you're looking at it from a DraftKings perspective, I just don't think Venata at that price is going to get the finish. So I'm not really going to play him very much in DraftKings. If you're betting this, I have no problem betting Venata, although I think the line is a little high for my liking. I just like Close on a DraftKings perspective because of the takedowns. He went for 7 takedowns against Taymor. He went for 7 takedowns against And again, when it comes to Taymor, Taymor likes to move. So if he's going for 7 takedowns against Taymor, it's very similar in bouncy, good moves down to exchange. So Close, I have to go catch him. And again, Close was very frustrated against Taymor at times in that fight, basically kind of begging the referee to move a little bit. But for the most part, I think he's got good kicks. I think he's got a heavy right hand, overhand right, so he can damage him when Venata, if he can push him up against the cage, I believe that he may be able to drag him down. I think he's going to be the stronger of these two fighters. But again, we can disagree. I kind of like Close because of his price.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand it. If you look at Close's record, half of his wins are by knockout. So, last fight on the Fight Pass prelims. I think it's going to be a barn burner. 16-7 Dan Hooker, 14-2 Gilbert Burns. Let's get your thoughts on it.
I'm really looking forward to this fight, so I agree with the barn burner approach to this fight. Yeah, Dan Hooker's last fight, sitting cage side. Covering it for MMA India. So Hooker looked great. Finished with a knee in Jersey at UFC Atlantic City. The knees are just doing damage to everybody. Lots of front kicks. And again, he's long, so he's going to want to keep distance. He's going to have a 4-inch reach in this fight, reach advantage, and he's going to have a 2-inch height advantage. But he can really attack with his punching, kind of keeps people away. I don't think he's a great knockout artist, which is why I really like Burns in this fight. Burns in this fight is going to have to get inside, and as long as he can stay away from the kicks and the knees to get inside, I think he can drag him down, go for a takedown, or push him up against the cage and go for a takedown. And in that exchange, if he can get him to the ground, I think Burns has the BJJ on the ground to finish this fight. I believe he has 5 subs. He has a couple knockouts, but he's able to he's quick. He's able to dart in and out of the pocket, kind of like a shuffle. He kind of shuffles in to strike. So I think his strong kicks early can really get after Hooker's legs. Heavy right hand, so you know he's kind of a threat everywhere. But I think he has a distinct advantage on the ground, so I really like Burns on DraftKings at his price, and I love the betting price. Although those odds, I believe, have closed up. I think he's plus 100 right now.
Yeah, when I looked there earlier on today when I was doing my write-up, Hooker was a minus 120 favorite, roughly, from site to site. Between the two guys, 27 of 29 wins have come by finish. And for me, the thing that tells me what's going to happen, I think, you know, if you look at Hooker's last 3 fights, he's got a submission and 2 clean knockouts, straight knockouts. I mean, win over Jim Miller was pretty impressive for sure. I don't think a lot of people would have figured that would have been the finish. But the only fight that makes me nervous, you know, picking Hooker, is if you look, he's got a loss to Jason Knight. And I mean, Jason Knight's a really strong fighter, really strong grappler, good on the ground. And like you said, Burns, he's also very strong on the ground. So I'm going to pick Hooker here. 3 straight wins, all finishes. But yeah, that one fight kind of makes me a little nervous.
Just take a break here for a second.
So now I'd like to take the chance to thank my sponsors. I'm brought to you by firstrow.ca. You can head on over to their website. I mean, they've got so much sports memorabilia. I'm looking at their website right now. There's a Bray Wyatt autograph wrestling card, the creepiest looking Kurt Angle. It's a one-on-one printing plate card, but man, that's scary. Kind of neat though. Aaron Judge minor league card, lots of baseball rookie cards, lots of autographed hockey cards as well. Brett the Hitman Hart autograph wrestling card, Roland DeLorme autographs. I mean, the list goes on. So if you head on over to the website, it's firstrow.ca, use the promo code FNP at checkout, and you'll qualify for free shipping on your order. And also to our American listeners, just keep in mind that all the prices on the website are in Canadian dollars, so you're going to be saving roughly 25% if you end up going with First Row. We're also brought to you today by Sisu, and I've told the story time and again, but I've had a Sisu mouthguard for a number of years now, and reason being is the one game that I didn't wear my mouthguard, I broke my front tooth, and it cost me an arm and a leg to get it replaced. So head on over to their website, it's sisuguard.com, use a promo code FNP10, you'll save 10% on your order. And also, from June of this year until June of next year, they partnered up with Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, and they're going to donate 10% of the proceeds on their yellow mouthguards, that's in the Aero and Junior styles, to the foundation. And what Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation is, it's a childhood cancer research foundation, so definitely a topic that's close to home for me. And I'm sure a lot of the listeners as well. So head on over to SISU Guard. You can still use the promo code FNP10, but make sure you head out and buy a yellow mouth guard from Sisu. So your first fight on the prelim, you got welterweights, 15-3 LFA product, Curtis Millender, and he's taking on 14-4 Max Griffin. And if you saw the stare downs today, they're pretty intense between those two guys. I mean, Griffin was dressed to the nines, but he threw out the old slit in the throat. And that's a tough one to pick. I mean, Max Griffin hasn't done overly well in the UFC. He's, you know, 2-2. They got 13 knockouts between them. And I think Millender surprised a lot of people when he came over from LFA and knocked out Thiago Alves in his debut. But Millender's on a 7-fight win streak. I mean, I think he's learned from his losses in Bellator. He has losses to Brendan Ward, Fernando Gonzalez, and Eddie Mendez. But he's got wins over top LFA talent. Like Nick Burns is going to headline a card coming up here soon against Eric Silva. And he beat Matthew Frinku, who just headlined a card last week. So, and he knocked both those guys out. So I've got Millender winning this fight. I mean, Griffin's got wins over Fernando Gonzalez, Joaquin Spiridov, but they're both by split decision in Bellator. And he's beat Chidi and Joe Kawani, who's another guy, familiar name from Bellator. But yeah, I see it going Millender's way either way. You look at it.
I'll tell you what. Remember, breaking down Millender's his tape for his first fight when he was going to fight Alves. And I just, when I broke down the fight and I looked at Alves, I thought Alves was going to be better. Yeah. I just think he had a bad fight against Millender. And Millender took a little bit of while to kind of get going. He was striking. I always felt like he was waiting for that finishing kick or that finishing punch. He was very, very patient. I think a little bit overly patient. And I think that's what may hurt him here against Griffin. Griffin's a boxer. I think Millender is very comfortable having the reach advantage in most of his fights. And in this fight, from the numbers that I have, they both have a 76-inch reach. So I think that he's going to be able to jab when Millender comes in. And I think he wants you to attack him so that he can counter with his kicks or attack you when you come in and you close the distance, attack you with his kicks. But I think Max Griffin is good in both areas. I think he'll lead and I think he'll also counter. So I think the boxing, if you can push Millender up against the cage, I think he's going to have the advantage on the ground. So I really like Griffin in this fight. And again, he has two losses. He lost to Colby Covington and he lost to Zaleski, you know, and he beat Mike Perry. And I don't think that anyone that Millender has beat is as good as Mike Perry, to be honest with you, or any of those other two guys. But with that being said, you know, don't get me wrong, Millender he's dangerous. He keeps distance. He has a long jab, just like Max Griffin did. And again, Max Griffin really used that jab against Mike Perry to keep this. I think this is a good fight. I think the odds should be a little closer, but I do like Max Griffin on DraftKings. And I don't know about a bet, because I think that the odds should be if you do like the underdog and Griffin, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. Those were two really tough guys to face there for Max Griffin in the UFC. And, of course, Covington near the top of the division now. Your next fight's top bantamweight matchup. You got number 3, Rafael Assuncao, taking on number 11, Rob Font. There's not a lot to gain for Assuncao. I mean, he's been at the top of the division for a long time. He's fought top talent. A couple fights against TJ Dillashaw, split him. But yeah, I mean, he's 4-1 in his last 5. The one thing that kind of bothers me is he's got 2 split decision wins. And if you look at Font, he's 3-2 in his last 5, losses to Lineker and Munoz, but you got to kind of discount his last win. I mean, he did beat Thomas Almeida, and there was a huge hype train behind Almeida, but he hasn't looked the same since his loss to Cody Garbrandt in 2016. Assuncao is the favorite from earlier today. I'm going to check right now and see what the odds are. Yeah, he's like minus 170, 180, something like that. So, I mean, it's kind of tough there. If you really look at it, Font lands a lot more significant strikes per minute, 5.28 compared to Asensio's 3.37. And all the other striking metrics are pretty damn close. So it leads me to pick Font in this fight, just where, you know, Asensio's been more of a decision fighter here lately.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that you just said. I kind of have a more breakdown. The only issue with Asensio is just everybody gets to that age where they've taken a lot of hits, a lot of pounding, and that one shink Rob Font that could know if it's his time. Years old, 31 fights. That's yeah. The number. 31 fights, and a lot of his fights go to decision. So again, you know, things for 3 rounds or 5 rounds, depending on the kind of. Sunsao's a very good striker. His leg kicks early, I think, can really keep Font away from him and kind of take the power out of his right hand. And if he does that with the leg kicks early, I think that Assuncao will last. I mean, you can make a bet on Assuncao by decision is plus 100. So you're basically getting even money on that. And for the most part, that's kind of the way that I see him winning. You just mentioned he has a couple split decisions in his last few fights. Even Marlon Moraes, he beat Marlon Moraes by split decision, I believe, in a very, very close fight. But on DraftKings, again, we're talking two different things here. So if we're talking a bet, I kind of like Assuncao, that decision prop. If you want to talk about DraftKings, though, Rob Font at his price is a great low-price guy. He can get the knockout, and if he gets that knockout, he's going to pay off. So it'll be great for GPPs.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it going Rob Font's way by knockout, too. So I think that's probably the safer pick there. And I had assumed here, and it was confirmed today, that Paul Felder and Mike Perry, they're going up to the main card. So if you look on the UFC website, it might not be updated just yet, but we'll get to that fight. So your next fight and the last one on the prelim, it's going to be a banger between number 9 ranked Uriah Hall and number 11 ranked Paulo Costa. At the ceremonial, you know, face-offs there earlier on today, I mean, Costa was dressed up to the nines. Uriah Hall kind of showed up. they squared off. Costa definitely looks like the bigger guy. I don't know where he gets his supplements, but I'd like to figure it out and get some for myself. And he's a huge underdog in the fight. If you're just going to bet straight up, it's a minus 400 favorite there earlier on today. Where is he sitting right now? Yeah, minus 400. So, with that, I mean, he's 11-0. All of his wins have come by finish. And Hall, I mean, he had a great come-from-behind win in his last fight against Christoph Jotko, but that's it. It was a great come-from-behind win. With Paulo Costa, you're not going to get the chance to come from behind. Unless his gas tank's complete garbage, it's definitely going to go Costa's way. And a good fight to kind of gauge this one is if you look back to when Hall fought Derek Brunson in 2016. I mean, it was sandwiched in between losses to Gegard and Robert Whittaker, so you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt. But Derek Brunson, I think, is kind of a similar-ish fighter to Paulo Costa, if you could try and compare him to someone. And I don't think it's going to go Hall's way at all.
Yeah, it's. I mean, to be honest with you, I think this fight's going to be over in the first round. I don't think that Paulo Costa's round, his forward pressure, is going to allow Uriah Hall to sit back in any way, shape, or form. So he's going to make him exchange, or else he's going to knock him out, is basically what's going to happen. With Uriah Hall, the bigger issue, that Atlantic City card that I had mentioned, I covered back in April, I guess. This fight was supposed to be on that card. It was supposed to be the co-main event, I believe. And Uriah Hall basically had like heart attack symptoms or something like that. So, you know, I don't know exactly what was going on. But he was obviously in bad shape if he's going through heart attack symptoms, because to me, a heart attack symptoms are basically a heart attack. This guy's coming back from a heart attack and trying to fight. And again, if you look on DraftKings, that's why the line is so big. I think on DraftKings, that's why the pricing is such a wide margin, I guess. But I think a great bet on this, if we're talking bets, Costa wins by KO is minus 155. You know, not everybody will let you parlay props, but if you can take that minus 155 straight, take it. If you want to parlay it with something else, that's fine too. Or even Costa wins inside the distance, minus 196, if you want to parlay that. I think those are very good bets. You could even go Costa first round plus 110. You know, I think those are all bets that I really like. I think Costa's gonna move with the forward pressure. And again, if you look at Uriah Hall's fights, he's fought some very good competition. But again, he's not going to beat you with volume. And it's basically why he lost to Whittaker. And against Jocko, he basically just countered Jocko. So Costa's going to come in. If he hits him, he's going to knock out Hall. If not, Hall can knock him out if he counters and connects, because he's got some big punching power in that right hand.
Yeah, for sure. That makes total sense right there, what you just said. So moving on from the prelims, going to the pay-per-view, I'm assuming right now that your first fight would probably be Paul Felder and Mike Perry, but it could be Saki Roundtree. But we'll open up with Felder and Perry. I mean, how do you see this one playing out?
I'll be honest with you. I'm going back and forth with this. And yeah, so am I. It's like every single time I look at it. The problem is when I thought Paul Felder would be able to do it. Again, I'm going to go back to that Atlantic City event for the third time. Paul Felder covered that event, okay? Yeah. So I'm sitting in weigh-ins. I think the event was on a Friday – no, Saturday night. So the event's on a Saturday night. Friday morning, we're sitting in weigh-ins. Paul Felder walks into the room. So it's like me, three other people recording, the UFC people recording. Again, I have media credentials, so I'm covering this for MMA India. Paul Felder walks in. If you remember that card, that's when Kevin Lee was overweight. So where everyone's basically weighed in. First half an hour of the fight. Now we're waiting for Kevin Lee to weigh in. So now Paul Felder's joking around and everything. Great personality, great sense of humor. So he goes up onto basically weigh himself in. You know what I mean? In street clothes. And he weighed in basically at about 190 pounds. So you're talking about a guy who usually fights at 155. You know, I know he wasn't training for a fight right then, but that was like 2 weeks after UFC 223, where he was supposed to fight and weighed in at 155. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this guy's already at 190 2 weeks later. Like, you know, so he walks around at 190. So for him to get to 170 for this fight, you know, it's a weight cut in itself. So I think this is really where he should be fighting. The issue is can Mike Perry knock him out? Of course. Mike Perry, you know, he's a very emotional fighter. Walks forward, closes distance, wants to exchange. I think Paul Felder is going to exchange with him. I think that's what's going to happen here. I mean, Paul Felder has the boxing credentials, you know, credentials for you. So I think he's going to try to do his little Rocky Balboa and, you know, stick and move and Mike Perry out. A lot of damage at his last upon Zanibio, really damaged to him. And Griffin, for the first two, really did that to Mike Perry. Mike Perry was able to kind of put him in not in the third round with punches, but that was a very it was a grinding fight. And again, you can't tough grind. You know, everyone says about Justin Gaethje all the time, right? You can't grind time, right? Fight like that, still take all that punish, still just move forward. Point, it's got to go for Mike Perry. So I really do like Paul Felder on DraftKings. This price fight is mispriced. Felder minus 155, I believe, still. But on DraftKings, in 0.4K, which on DraftKings by everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you there. I think Felder's going to be able to outlast him. I think it's going to be another decision loss for Mike Perry. If you really look into it, I mean, all his wins are by knockout, but he's 2-3 in his last five. And I mean, his knockout win over Alex Reyes, that was super, you know, late in the game. That was a late call for Reyes to come up and fight Perry. So I don't have a whole lot of respect for Perry. You know, you got to get your name out there somewhere, and he's doing his own thing, which is fine, but... as far as the fight goes, I see Felder outlasting him. I think he's going to be able to dance in and out. They're going to strike for sure, but I see it playing out as a decision win for Felder.
And I tell you what, like Mike Perry, I think is trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, yep. He changed camps. He's at Jackson Wink now. You know, after the last, after the look with his girlfriend and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's trying to make changes in his game. But again, what did he do? Like a 6-week, 8-week training camp? You know what I mean? Like how much can they fight the best that they can, but how much in terms of improvement are you really going to see? I think you're going to see the same old Mike Perry. If anything, he may be, you know, a little more timid, you know, a little more, if they're trying to give him too much to think about. So that's kind of the way that I come across here. And even with Paul Felder, he's a very good inside fighter. He's very good with his elbow. He's very good with his, even if it's close range kind of stuff. My honest only concern is if Mike Perry is stronger than him and pushes him up against the cage. That's really my only cage.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that makes total sense. And a couple guys that aren't going to be nervous about throwing bombs. You got former Glory champ Gokhan Saki taking on Khalil Roundtree. I mean, Saki had that crazy comeback against Henrique da Silva last September. Impressed everyone. I mean, some people kind of knew who he was. I didn't think the UFC marketed him enough going into that fight. But these guys were supposed to fight UFC 219. Saki had a knee injury, and we're half a year later, and we're finally going to get into it. I mean, if you look at the numbers, it doesn't really tell the true story, because Saki's only got the one fight in the UFC, and he's got over 8 significant strikes per minute, which is ridiculous. But he's taken on a Roundtree, never been knocked out before, and I think this might be the first knockout loss.
Now let me ask you this. You just said significant strikes per minute.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea what round trees are? I know, that's why I'm asking.
2.
Okay, so you do know. Okay. So yeah. Now if you're telling me that Saki's gonna throw, let's just say 8 is too high. Let's call it 6.
Yep.
If you're telling me that Saki's gonna throw 6 significant strikes in the first minute of the fight, do you see the strikes that he throws?
Yeah, they're pretty wild. Throws a lot of hooks and holds his hands down by his waist.
And that's basically, if you want to watch a really good fight, because again, I broke down this fight and I felt like I just didn't understand the odds in this fight. And
yeah.
I still don't understand the odds, but I went back and I went on YouTube and I watched a fight with Gokhan Saki and Alistair Overeem.
Yeah.
Now, if you know anything about Overeem, what does everyone always say about Overeem? He's a world-class striker, right?
Yeah.
These two guys struck. I mean, watch the first. It's a quick fight. It's only kickboxing. I believe is 3-minute rounds.
Yep.
I believe it's in the second round. In the second, Overeem knocks him out. But actually, what he did is he hit him with a kick in he had a liver kick. So he won the fight. He beat Saki on a liver kick. But you're talking who's a heavyweight. This fight's going to be 205. Who's a world class striker against another world class striker? I believe Gokhan Saki is like 85-12. 5-12 in kickboxing. So
yep.
If you go back to what in that first fight, kickboxing fights are 3 minutes. Where did he guess? He guessed right around the 33 minute. I think the first fight, I think he had that adrenaline dump. I think for the more he's going to, I think his kicks are very powerful, right and left punches are very powerful. And again, you know, De Silva thought that he was going to be able to take him down, wasn't able to. Is Roundtree going to try to take? He's going to be able to take him down. I think Roundtree has like one takedown in his five UFC fights. So he's trying to do something that he. So I think that actually been tweeting out. I don't know if you've seen it. I've been out all day. I got to. They're going to put in the bet for Rocky by knockout. I love him in the first and second round. I'm going to sprinkle some money. You know, maybe a couple new things. But I think Saki knocks Roundtree out in the first two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at the metrics. I've watched the fights. I've watched a lot of Saki kickboxing fights. One of my favorite ones, if you haven't watched it, is when he fought Rico Verhoeven. And I mean, Verhoeven's probably the best in the world at heavyweight. And he got the win there. There was a kind of an awkward knockdown in the first round, which kind of sucked for Saki because you're only allowed two in a round, right? And after that, he was pretty timid. But I don't see a way for Roundtree to win unless he gets lucky. And I mean, Saki keeps his hands down, but again, he's a world-class kickboxer, so he knows what he's doing, and he's one of the best strikers in the world. So yeah, I see this one going for Saki, and I think you're gonna have good luck there in Vegas. So your next fight, you know, premier lightweight fight between Michael Chiesa and Anthony Pettis. You know, listening to your podcast, I think we're gonna have a difference of opinion here, but Chiesa's got the height and reach advantage. You guys have talked about it. He doesn't really have the weight advantage, and that definitely showed when these two squared off today. Michael Chiesa is a skinny guy and a tall guy and a guy that likes to wear pineapples on his shirts and on his shorts. But, you know, he's a great grappler. I mean, 10 of his 14 wins are by submission. He's 3-1 in his last four. He's got that one loss to Kevin Lee, which is a little suspect, but he was going to lose that fight anyway. And I mean, for me, a good gauge for Pettis, you look at his last six fights going back to 2016, and he's 2-4. I mean, he's fought top competition, lost to Holloway, Poirier, Barboza, Alvarez, RDA. But, you know, he's got a win over Charles Oliveira. And Oliveira is kind of similar to Chiesa. But, I mean, the thing that jumps out to me, he's never been submitted. But at the same time, his takedown defense is 58% overall. So by that, I think Chiesa is going to be able to, you know, keep going in. I mean, even if you're 1-10 and you can finally get him to the ground and submit him, I think that's what counts. So I've got Chiesa in this fight.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you. I actually have Chiesa by sub. That's what I have in my pick'em column. So I don't really disagree. But I think what you're referring to is, we may disagree on this a little bit, is just from a DraftKings perspective.
Yep.
Pettis is the kind of guy at his price, because he's such a low price, that you got to pick some underdogs. You know what I mean? And again, anyone who plays DraftKings knows you got to try. I don't think you can actually make a lineup unless you have at least two underdogs. Okay. So especially with this fight, because the mid-range fight between Ortega and Holloway is off the card. So there's really like nobody in their mid-range. So that kind of forces you to take guys that are higher priced, which means you got to take probably three underdogs to even fit in a lineup this week. So it's going to be interesting in GPPs this week for sure. But I think Pettis is the kind of guy. I mean, if you just look what his brother did a few weeks ago, you know, and I think I referred to this. I don't know if I did it on this podcast or another one, but if you look at what Sergio did a few weeks ago, everyone said if they get the ground to the Joe Benavidez, if he gets it to the ground, he has the BJJ advantage. And Sergio was basically able to keep it on the feet for the most part, won the first two rounds, and then, you know, was able to you know, not get submitted and kind of stay out of any dangerous situations. So, and with that being said, it's a path to victory for Anthony Pettis. I don't think he's going to knock him out, although, you know, he could. I think Anthony Pettis is the better striker. I don't think that yep. Chiesa is a great striker. He's got a long jab, but I don't think he's a great striker. But with that said, if it goes to the ground, I think, you know, Chiesa could get the sub. He has beat some good strikers. I think he beat Alaia Quinta, right, on that season of Tough.
Yeah, quite a while ago, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a while ago, yeah. But I mean, he could beat these guys. So I think this is the kind of fight that I don't have high expectations for. So I kind of hope that it kind of overperforms, especially for Chiesa. You know, he's so concerned with what happened with Conor McGregor and suing Conor McGregor and all this other stuff. Like, when was the last time he even fought? I think it's been over a year since he's even had a fight.
Yeah, that Lee fight would have been his last one, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so he hasn't been in the ring in a while, so I don't know where his head's at. I mean, I kind of like him. I thought he did great on the telecast when he was on the UFC show, the Fight Night show a couple weeks ago. But for the most part, I just don't know. I don't know what to expect from him. I know he's going to try to get sub. I know he's going to try to get it to the ground. But I think that Pettis can get the better of him in striking exchanges.
The one thing that I like for Chiesa, and you kind of get into it a little bit, but he corners a lot of fighters. I know when the UFC was in Halifax there last year, he was one of those two featured fighters. You know, they have him, they do the media, and they get the pictures. But at the same time, he was there cornering at least two fighters. And you see him quite often at UFC events, and I think I've seen him at a few Bellator events cornering fighters. And that's one really good thing for him, because I know a lot of fighters don't watch too much tape on their opponents. But with Chiesa, he's always in the ring or around a cage, getting that experience. So that's the one good thing for him. But yeah, I mean, ring rust could play a factor in this. But yeah, definitely got Chiesa. So for your new co-main event, I just want to get your thoughts on this one. I mean, you got number one Francis Ngannou taking on number six Derek Lewis. This could be a main event of a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it could easily be a main event of a pay-per-view. And again, most of the time, if it weren't, Stipe in a championship fight, it would be the main event. But for the most part, I just like Francis. I know Derek is what's the best way to put it? He's an athletic guy. He has a football background. He can be evasive at times, but is he going to be able to stay away? I just don't know. Is he going to try to take him down? I mean, he has gone for takedowns before, but it's not really his thing. 0.65 takedown average. So is it really his thing? I don't think so. It's kind of like Khalil Roundtree. So you're telling me that these two guys are going to fight it out on the feet? I'm going to take the better striker, and I think that's Francis. I think they both have one punch power, but I think that everybody knows that when Francis hits you, that's the one punch that will knock you out. And again, what he did to Alistair Overeem and he's done to other people was just ridiculous. So again, You go back to some of the guys that were wrestlers. If Curtis Blaydes could have that fight back against Francis, I think he would gladly take that fight back. Go to more of a wrestling base, get him down early, you know, exhaust him, and hopefully get the win. Obviously, Stipe gave everybody the blueprint, but you know, Stipe did wrestle in college, I believe, at Cleveland State and somewhere else.
Yeah.
So he has a wrestling background. Derek Lewis, I mean, he's a football guy, so I'm sure he's tackled people. But, you know, I think it's going to play out on the feet. The other thing that I noticed in video of Derek Lewis is whenever somebody comes with an overhand right, which you will see from Francis within, probably two of them in the first minute of the fight, he kind of ducks down and brings his head down. So if Francis follows it up with an uppercut or with a knee to kind of stand him up, I think his head is going to be there for that knockout. So I don't see this fight going long. I don't see a second round. I like first round Derek Lewis. I'm sorry, Francis Ngannou.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the one thing from listening to your podcast that really stuck with me. And then I watched the tape, and Derek Lewis does duck. And another thing is he's faced a lot of adversity in his last three fights. Travis Brown hurt him. He wasn't doing well against Mersin Tabora, got him in the clinch and landed some strikes, got the TKO win. And then against Mark Hunt, he was hurt. Like, his back was hurt. That was a serious injury. And one of the things from Embedded, if you've been watching it, from episode 3, they showed, he was getting a massage on his back. They were cupping it. He said it hurt. I mean, it was all in good fun, but at the same time, man, it probably does hurt for a guy like Derek Lewis to say it hurts. So for me, I mean, he's got the cardio. Ngannou, in his favor, I mean, he kind of had a crazy ride all the way up to the top. Beat Curtis Blaydes. I mean, he beat a wrestler, so that was great. Overeem couldn't take him down. There you go. But then he went and fought Stipe. And like you said, Stipe's got the Cleveland State background from wrestling. But Ngannou's real problem was cardio. Now, they said that he switched up his team. He's training. He's not training at the Performance Institute as much now. He's splitting camps, and he's training in France as well. And I really think that Lewis, he's going to go in there. He's going to throw some of those funky kicks that we see. He's going to come at him from weird angles. He looks like he's in really good shape, like better shape than he normally is in. He looks like he's not going to have to cut a whole lot of weight going into it. And to me, I see this fight, it's going to play out the same way that the Matt Mitrione, Roy Nelson fight played out in the heavyweight Grand Prix in Bellator. Mitrione, the better striker. Nelson, all of a sudden he starts taking the fight to the ground. And I mean, Roy Nelson's takedowns are going to be better than Derek Lewis. And we're kind of talking apples and oranges, guys who are a little over the hump and guys who are in their prime. But yeah, I mean, Lewis has got a win over Roy Nelson from 2016. So you got to take that into account. But I think by striking metrics alone, I mean, you know, Ngannou took a lot of punishment in his last fight, but Lewis throws more shots, he lands more, he's got better defense, he's got a low takedown average, but at the same time, if he gets the fight to the ground, he's going to win. And I take that Tabora fight, I mean, if it gets into the clinch, Ngannou, I don't know, is he going to try and just stand there and take down defense, and then Lewis throws a shot? I've got this fight in Lewis's favor. It's either going to be a later round, like a third round knockout, or it's going to go to decision. But yeah, I mean, it could either go that way or it's going to be a quick knockout for Francis. So those are kind of the two ways it could go.
And I'll even add to the on his back. I heard Derek Lewis, I don't remember which podcast it was on. It may have been the Ariel Helwani podcast. I listened to him. I listened to Luke Thomas. I listened to Paul Thomas. I listened to podcasts I can get my hands on. But he mentioned that he basically gets a shot, I believe, every like 3 or 4 weeks. So they're basically timing the so that by the time, and again, this is all approved. This isn't like anything that he shouldn't be doing. This is all approved. But he basically times the shot so that, he'll be okay with the pain. But he basically said, if I don't have the shot, I would not be able to fight.
Yeah.
So that's how bad his back is, you know, and he admitted that wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and it's definitely worrying. They don't spend a lot of time focusing on it. I haven't really heard many people talking about it. And it's the same thing with, we were talking about Sun Tzu, and he had the wins over Dillashaw. Going into Dillashaw's last fight against Cody Garbrandt, there was no narrative at all that Cody Garbrandt was out for a significant amount of time with a bad back injury. And for me to pick that fight, I said easily Dillashaw is going to win, no doubts. And most people didn't agree with me, but yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that could really hurt Derek Lewis, and the fact that Ngannou has ungodly amounts of power in his hands. Your main event, I mean, at the presser with Dana there today, they had all the heavyweights sitting at the desk, and people were asking them questions, and it was kind of weird to see Ngannou sit next to Stipe. But another thing that a lot of people noticed is the fact that, you know, Stipe and DC are going to weigh in around the same. DC might actually weigh a little bit more. And he's always had a height disadvantage. So it's kind of a tough fight to pick. I mean, you got kind of, I wouldn't want to say similar styles, but they do kind of fight a bit the same way. And the one good thing for DC is the fact that he's fought guys like Stipe before. He's fought, Dan Henderson, who was 6'1 at light heavyweight. And he just totally destroyed him, like totally. And then he fought Josh Barnett at heavyweight, who was 6'3". So kind of similar guys there. At the same time, you know, in his last fight against Volkan, just use the same style. Just go right after him, go right after Stipe. He's captain at AKA. He's training with Cain Velasquez. I mean, it's a perfect training partner to have. And all he's got to do is be aggressive, get the fight to the ground, and just grind it out. I mean, the cardio is definitely going to be there. Then again, for Stipe, he's never really faced anyone with DC's wrestling pedigree, if you look down through his record. I mean, both guys are Division I. Stipe, like you said, at Cleveland State. Our former guest Gerald Harris trained with him a bit. DC went to Oklahoma State. And DC, he brings a lot to the table. He's got a lot of different tools in his tool belt. And if you look at Stipe's last four opponents, Fabricio Werdum, not a guy known for striking. Alistair Overeem, a guy pretty much only known for striking. Doesn't get any submission wins anymore. JDS, a striker. Ngannou, a striker. They're all somewhat one-dimensional. And DC brings a lot of different things to the game. So in that regard, I take DC to win it, and it's either going to be a decision win for DC or it's going to be a TKO in the later rounds.
I 100% see the decision win for DC. I think that's his path to victory. I just think that Stipe's boxing, he uses a lot of feints. He's just so good, in boxing, that it's going to be tough for Cormier to really get in without some damage. The one thing that I think Stipe can add to his game, and Cormier does come in, is if he starts using some elbows and can keep distance, push him off with an elbow, and then, jab, third piece to that combination. I'm like throwing punches as I'm sitting here thinking about it. But, I think Stipe, again, he's just so versed in his boxing skills, and he keeps everything so tight that it's going to be difficult for Cormier. I could be wrong here, and I totally agree. Steve fought a wrestler like Cormier. But again, there's still a 5-inch height advantage. There's still a 7-inch inch reach advantage that Cormier is again going to have to overcome. I know he's training with Cain Velasquez. Cain Velasquez is basically the reason that DC fights at 205. DC fights at fight each other, so that's why DC went down to 205. So I know he's training with Cain, and he, you know, Cain's a great person to spar with, to spar with Stipe. But you know, you look around and you ask anybody who's the greatest, you know, heavyweight of all time, and at this point, I mean, it's tough to not say Stipe. It's tough to not say. I mean, he's in the highest promotion. He's had, I think, four. He's won six fights in a row and four title defenses. Yeah. If that's accurate. So, and again, in a lot of those fights, like, you know, you take a guy like Verdum, you know, like they asked Stipe before the fight, you know, what are you worried about with Verdum? Are you worried about his jujitsu? And he said, it's hard to do jujitsu when you're getting punched in the face. You know what I mean? It's like the old Mike Tyson line. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And Stipe seems to, you know, people, you know, so I can say, I think that the one thing about Stipe is people overlook his power. If you look at the fight with Overeem, and I noticed this, Overeem caught him flush in the chin, knocked him down. Overeem ran in for a guillotine. Stipe basically got up and just chased him around the ring. Like, yeah. Why is Overeem, after you hurt the guy, why are you running away from Stipe? Not away from Stipe. Not for nothing. Earlier in the fight, he must have hit you with something that you felt. You know what I mean? So you want him to get it back to a distance fight. You don't want to get in close. And again, just that right there, Overeem basically caught him flush, and, you know, he got up within 10 seconds and recovered. I know he's been knocked down and things like that, but he recovers quickly. I really like Stipe in this fight. I think he's got that workmanlike approach. Cormier does too, and I just think there's a lot for him to overcome here. You know, and I know he's beaten heavyweights in the past, but I kind of when I do tape study, I kind of go through tape study, I kind of refights. So it's not that I'm dismissing what he's done in the past. I know he can do it. It's just a lot for him to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, Stipe is definitely a totally different animal than Volkan Oezdemir, who's another guy, kind of like Ngannou, who just got kind of thrust into the spotlight all the way up to the top and then really had problems against DC. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fights on this card that could go either way. There's a lot of fights on this card that are hard to predict. And yeah, exactly. And numbers don't really tell the whole story. So it should be a great card on Saturday. And then you've also got the Ultimate Fighters finale tomorrow night as well. You've got PFL going on right now. So yeah, I mean, it was awesome to break down this card with you. And people should definitely go listen to the Jersey Boys podcast on YouTube. Where else can people find you?
Right now, I'm just on YouTube with the Jersey Boys podcast. I'd love to have you on, break down fights. You know, I try to have a guest every week to break down the fights with me. I try not to use the same people, but we wind up doing that just because, you know, you get friendly on Twitter. And, you know, the MMA community is great like that. You know, like, you reached out to James Lynch in the past. I've reached out to him about trying to figure out what program to use and stuff like that. And everybody just kind of helps everybody else out, you know, because we're, at the end of the day, we love watching fights. We love predicting fights, and it's just the way that the fight game works. You know what I mean? It's great that there's going to be, you know, there should have been 12 fights, but there's going to be 11 fights. If you're a betting guy, you can bet on 11 fights. You can bet props. You can bet multiple things on every fight. You know, every fight at most is usually 15 minutes. Some of the title fights are longer. There's only one of those, and it's the last one. So if you lose a bet at 15 minutes later, you can make another one. And it's great for, you know, for the sport, and it's great for betting legally. You know, we started talking about betting. It's great for betting to be in the United States because everybody can kind of get on and do it. And I think the sport is going to keep growing because of that.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I'll have to have you on again on here as well. And I really want to thank you for coming on. I mean, it was awesome having Steven coming on the podcast from Jersey Boys MMA. Like I said, you can catch him on YouTube. I really appreciate it. He brings a totally different, you know, type of analysis into the fights. He definitely has a background with the DraftKings, and on his last podcast and his 226 breakdown with MMA numbers, those guys really went into analyzing fights a little bit differently than I would have. And it's definitely good to get a different perspective on, you know, the way that other people see fights, predicting fights, previewing them and whatnot, and their breakdowns and analysis. So I definitely recommend that you check both of those guys out. And that just about does it for episode 25 of the podcast. So I'm going to be, I'll be on Twitter. I'll be watching, you know, the Ultimate Fighter 27 finale tonight, as well as 226 tomorrow. So if you've got any questions for me, any suggestions, anything at all, make sure you tweet at me. and hopefully you enjoy the fights this weekend. So we'll see you back again on Monday. Another great podcast. We'll do a recap of, you know, the two events here. And then, you know, you look forward to next week, and you've got two Bellator events, and as well, you've got UFC with JDS and Blagoy Ivanov. So we'll see you again next week.